comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be all around this beautiful planet. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a million other things tonight. You chose to be here, and I am glad you did. I am delighted to be here with you. We're here because you have a right to know. We're here because you matter. Because you matter, we publish something called the K-Files. Now, those who are new to the show, this is your first time to tune in, you don't know about it. K-Files is our free weekly newsletter. And it's a good newsletter, and it comes out every week. We send it to your email inbox, okay? So if you're not subscribed to the K-Files, be sure you get subscribed by clicking right there on the link on my website that says K-Files. You can't miss it. Big letters right in the middle of your screen. It says K-Files. Click it. Put your email address in there. Click submit. And you're almost done. There's just one more step, and that is you're going to get an email that has a link in it that you have to use to activate your subscription. If you don't do that, you won't get the K-Files. Okay? So you have to activate your subscription. That way we can be sure we don't spam anybody. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, but most people stay with us forever. And we think you probably will too. Now, we also have our members community. It's always free to listen to this show. Absolutely free to listen to this show. Doesn't matter if you're listening on AM, FM, shortwave, internet, mobile devices. It's always free to listen. But we have a lot of other stuff, a lot of really cool stuff in the members community. And the members community is only $7.50 a month. That comes out to 25 cents a day. I mean, that's nothing. And what do you get? Well, you get the archives, you get forums, you get chat, you get your own blog, your own photo album, your own video album. You get to watch the show live every night. You get the Video Galaxy, and that's a bunch of videos for you to watch. Just lots and lots and lots of stuff, plus some special broadcasts that we do. We do those broadcasts inside the members' community, special broadcasts, seminars, special guests, things like that. And if you're a member, then you get to be a part of it. So you can take care of that tonight, right? Just click up there where it says join and join. And right now, we'll give you the first 7 days for free. Be sure, when you join, that you do what the instructions say right there on the page when you first log in. Read the new members info page. It does contain information you need. It is vitally important, so be sure you read it, okay? Tonight, my guest is going to be Greg Voles, and Greg is he's got a really sort of unique perspective on UFOs and extraterrestrials. And I think you're going to enjoy hearing from him, and we'll do that right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, and this evening we are going to be talking with Gregory Volz. Gregory Volz is formerly in Navy personnel. While he was in the Navy, he worked on special naval contracts, which included the relocatable over-the-horizon radar, which is a predecessor to HAARP. Everybody is familiar with HAARP. Well, this was a predecessor to HAARP. And he also learned some specialized computer programming and having to do with his work there with the Navy and HTML and Java. And he is also the person who has developed the Northwest UFO Chasers website. And if you take a look at the Northwest UFO Chasers website, you will find that it contains a lot of information about a lot, and I mean a lot, of different topics related to the UFO phenomenon. So, Greg, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. We're glad to have you.
Fantastic. I am so excited to be here, Kevin.
Let me begin by saying thank you for your service in the Navy.
Sure. Now, I would like to say, you know, that was a very short stint in the Navy, okay? So I don't want to, you know, talk that up. When I worked on naval contracts, it was outside of naval service. I was a civilian at that point, but...
Okay, well, we still thank you for your service.
Sure.
Now, before we get into the material that we're going to discuss tonight, right, I've got a question about this, about HAARP and the Navy.
Okay.
Most of us, when we think of the Navy, you know, we're thinking of great big boats, big ships, and submarines and oceans, and HAARP is all out in the atmosphere. What's up with the Navy having anything to do with HAARP?
Okay, in order for them to build this facility, they needed to move that equipment all around the world, and I know very quick answer is they transported equipment from one aircraft carrier to another. They needed programming to tell them dates and times to move the equipment.
Okay, but it's HAARP is under the Office of Naval Research now.
Right.
So why is the Navy concerned about the ionosphere?
Well, originally it was we were shooting trajectory off the ionosphere, and it would send the signal over into a location, and then it would come back, and we could get weather patterning information, and unfortunately it was also missile trajectory strike information type. But weather patterning information seemed to be more of their interest.
Okay. All right. So it's not so much that they're interested in the ionosphere as it is that they are interested in the capabilities that this machine has in support of naval operations.
Right, and I don't want to get into too many technical details other than, you know, HAARP, there's a lot of information out there, and I'd just like to point, you know, to the videos that are available on the Northwest UFO Chasers video library on the subject of HAARP would be a lot better.
All right. Well, from your background, we can clearly see you have a lot of your background has a lot of technical stuff in it. There's not anything much more technical than computer programming. That's very, very technical. And then we go to your website, and what we see is that not only are you interested in UFOs, you're interested in UFOs in a very broad sense and also a very deep sense. And that it leads you into a whole lot of areas that perhaps some people might consider to be paranormal and not just UFO, and yet they are related. How do you make that journey? What is it that projected you from this technical background into this journey into the strange and unexplained?
You know, that was a great question, and the way you stated that. I had a spiritual experience when I was young, and then I became interested in UFOs in 1978 when I discovered the Betty and Barney Hill case. But Stanton Friedman was my hero, and he said, you got to go do the research. So that's what I basically started to do. I went out and started to do the research, and I utilized my background to develop this Northwest UFO Chasers video library. And in that regard, so I developed the library, and then I needed a tool called the timeline, which is a historical timeline that goes along with the library to be able to see the elements that are listed in time. And then that led me to understanding and looking at a time period 100,000 years ago. Did you want to say something, Kevin?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So I looked at that time frame, kept popping up on this historical chart, and you can go right to the main website, and on there you'll find, it'll say timeline, you can click on that, and scroll down, and you'll see there's this gap in there at 100,000 years, and that became very interesting to me, and I really want to communicate this part of it. I'm not just giving my opinion. Basically, I'm giving a conjecture in an opinion based on this information that I've developed in the Northwest UFO Chasers Library. So, and what I'm saying is that when I talk about this information, it's based upon actual research work that is existing in the library, so you can later go and look at that information. And what I'm saying is that, again, we know that the hominids were wiped out about 100,000 years ago. And the wiping out of the hominid species was written about in ancient Sumerian cuneiform, and as in the epic tale of Gilgamesh and the ancient Hebrew in the Noah flood story account. But what I want to make, you know, what I really want to talk about is the Orion constellation, the constellation of Leo, and the Taurus constellation end up making up this triangle. And the representation of this triangle is in ancient Indian Sanskrit, ancient Sumerian cuneiform, as in Enkai-Enlil and Ninlil, ancient Egyptian hieroglyphic, as in Isis, Osiris, and Horus, and ancient Hebrew. The representation of the triangle formation, known as the Holy Trinity in Christianity, seems to also be in Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, and Buddhism.
Okay, so, well, before we go any further, tell us those...
made of different constellations is the Star of David, father of King Solomon in the Old Testament of the Bible.
Okay, Greg, before we go any further, tell us those three constellations again. Orion, Taurus, and what?
It was the Orion constellation, the Leo constellation, and the Taurus constellation.
Okay.
And one thing I'd like to mention about the... Okay, so anyway, I want to try to get through... Those beings listed above from those constellations in that region of space seem to have brought some type of stardust to the Earth about 4.5 billion years ago. And, of course, from 4.5 billion to about 4.5 million, you know, it was dinosaurs and reptilians, but hominid species showed up 4.5 million years ago, okay? Now, it looks like there was some type of genetic engineering going on, in the sense that all of these hominid species were basically in existence, but wiped out at that 100,000 year point period. Now, 100,000 years ago, and prior to two ice ages, the hominids were wiped out except for Homo sapien. The events of wiping out the hominid species were written about in the ancient Sumerian cuneiform in the epic tale of Gilgamesh. I already said that, okay. So anyway, I wanted to ultimately get to this point of the transition of these beings from that location of space to Mars. And I know this will sound crazy, but ultimately they got to Mars. Something happened while they were inhabited on Mars. They built a satellite. They moved into the satellite. That satellite was towed into place and is basically our moon to this day. It's the hollow moon. The moon is hollow, and we have video evidence from a secret Apollo mission. Now, what I'm saying here, again, I know this. A lot of this sounds crazy, but it's not just my opinion. This is information that is based on the Northwest UFO Chasers video library, and it's kind of a story that it is all telling us. And so anyway, those scientists in that hollow moon were doing genetic engineering on Homo sapien and were located within the hollow moon and were caught finding the women subjects desirable. There, they have accounts in the Bible and the books of Enoch and also the Nag Hammadi that talk of them being thrown to Earth at Eridu, a spaceport that was established there. And then there was another spaceport at Baalbek. The genetic engineering continued and groups established on the Great Plateau of Giza in Egypt. Now, what they found was a pad, okay, to contain sacred geometric formulation. And I would like to mention, like, the work by Chris Dunn and the ancient technologies in Egypt. But these beings are known as the Menkarans and dated back to the age of Leo. So this is the key here. We go back to the age of Leo if we look at the constellation of Leo, and we've, like Robert Bovall said, 10,500 years. Plus one full precessional cycle of 26,100 years, which gives us a dating to 36,600 years ago. And there is circumnavigational evidence in South America that links the Menkarans to the ancient people in South America. So now we talk about between 36,600 year point going back to 100,000 years, we're looking at work by a man by the name of Dr. Spencer Wells at Stanford University and a documentary of The Journey of Man, which substantiates the transitionary patterns during this time period. And then again, going back to that 36,600-year time point, we can talk about that continent of Atlantia and a landmass where Cuba is now extending eastward. And then we have to realize that the sea levels were different and the water in different locations, as evidenced by Graham Hancock finding Dwarka off the coast of India. And then Antarctica today was found to be floating. So what I'm really saying is that there was some type north... South America and Africa were connected by this continent known as Atlantia, but it was between the time period of 36,600 years ago and 100,000 years ago that that existed. Now, we know some kind of a cataclysmic event happened, and it's all underwater now, and that's, again, pointing back to the epic tale of Gilgamesh and the story of Noah. Now, I'm almost through this. The abduction experience by the... This is a critical part and of the story for me. Was the spiritual experience that I had with the Nordic Andromedan alien intelligence. And they abducted me through this experience, genetically modified my DNA, and then put me in contact with what is known as the Akashic Records, or the Universal Library of Knowledge and the Akashic Records of Life, which, if you look at the Bible, it says in Luke 10:20 that these Akashic Records of Life are written on soniferous, or ether technology. And so what they showed me was that we all have this light essence, and I began to see each human as a three-dimensional being, and that we are expanding outward, you know? And I realized, and they began to explain and communicate to me that there are things going on outside of the human sensory perception levels. Human sensory spectrum perception levels. And so, and in that regard, There are 10 levels of angels. That also equates to the quantum and astrophysics calculations that talk about multidimensionality. And so what I'm really trying to do in conclusion here, in a way, is just to give an overall view of a practical application to the scriptural literature, to include the Bible, the Nag Hammadi, the books of Enoch, the Mahabharata, the Tibetan Contour, the Indian Sangras, and many other ancient pieces of scriptural literature. And this is tells us a story. And that's pretty much it, Kevin.
Okay, so the question was, what propelled you into doing this?
Well, what propelled me into doing all of this was I got interested, you know, when I was very young in, you know, the subject of UFOs. But all of my life, I had I've been driven with this just great desire to find out why we're here on Earth and what we're doing and what's going on. And I was given these answers, like I was told, you know, I was handed the Bible, and the answers are in the Bible. So I would read the Bible, and I couldn't, it just made no sense to me. So I just went off on a journey.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I've jotted down a number of things for us to talk about.
Sure.
Based on what you've just told us, we have, unfortunately, only less than a minute before we get to break. But very quickly, how has your DNA been altered? In what way is it altered?
Okay. That's going to take quite a while. Are we just have a minute here?
You now have 39 seconds.
Why don't we go ahead? I'll just mention it's within the human genome in the gene splice, and I can talk about that when we get back.
All right. All right, folks, we'll be back with Greg Volz in just a moment. He is the founder of and developer of the Northwest UFO Chasers web experience. You want to be sure and check that out. And you'll find there a great repository of information. Some of it you may be familiar with, and some of it you undoubtedly are not familiar with. We'll be back right after this break.
Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Gregory Volz, and we are talking about a lot of far-ranging things that are related to the whole idea of UFOs, extraterrestrial beings, and so forth. And before we went to break, Greg, I had asked you, in what way has your DNA been changed? You told us that your encounter with the Nordic Andromedan alien intelligence resulted in your DNA being altered.
Correct.
Okay, and
yeah,
in what way?
Excuse me?
In what way?
Yeah, that's interesting. And what transpired there, it was only through a tetraploid analysis of the marker indicators could we determine within this specific gene that has been ultimately identified. And I think they're working on this now. And they're calling it the UFO gene, but it's a splice in there. And, you know, I don't know. I'm not a technical expert in this area or anything like that. But like I said, I want to really communicate that this is almost a spiritual experience in the sense that when they abducted me, they communicated to me, you know, that there are angels beyond alien intelligence. And what I'm really trying to communicate is the paradigm that we've all been locked into of just a heaven and just a hell is different in the sense that that we really live in this world that's a bigger thing. And we are going to metamorphosize and grow into that. Now, what I'm trying to say is they just modified that splice in there so that I could communicate with them telepathically. Now, they have this technology that basically puts it as a film strip across my mind, and I believe Edgar Cayce talked about this, Alex Collier talks about it, Billy Meyer talks about it, and Sheldon Neidl talk about it. And I believe that all of us are in contact and in communication with them, but through this Universal Library of Knowledge and the download of this Akashic Record of Life, you know, it gave me the information that I, you know, about, and I know that was, I'm sorry for the long lengthy answer there about the gene splice, but go ahead.
Okay, so how do you know that this has happened to you? I mean, have there been medical tests that have verified that your genetics have been changed?
Okay. I have had my DNA analysis done. I have worked with John Mack and Mary Rodwell in the past. I have worked in providing information, but no, I mean, this is a very, you know, this is a bleeding edge genetic research. And so it comes down to determination and analysis and opinion by PhD scientists at Stanford, and a lot of it is under private, you know, contract right now. So,
okay, so I don't know the answer to the question. Has genetic testing shown that your DNA has been altered?
Well, let's put it this way. Everybody has this gene within them, and everybody has the gene. In order to determine whether it was modified within the splice is going to be extremely difficult to prove. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Okay, so the answer is no. Am I correct?
Well, I can't say. I'm saying that we can provide you with the analytical reports and the analysis, and you can make your own determination.
Okay. All right. Okay, now, you mentioned these Minkarians. Let's get up to speed on that, because that's something I think most of our audience will not be familiar with, although some have run across information like that. So who are the Minkarians?
Okay, and you know, okay, so here's basically the way that I am, the information that's coming out of the Northwest UFO Chasers video library and the book Origination, ETs, EBEs, Alien Intelligence, that's the name of my book, talks about the Minkarians, and they were the first dynasty in the Egypt. But again, we have to buy into the fact that we're talking about going back 10,500 years looking to the constellation of Leo, and we're going to take we're going to change the Sphinx head back into a lion, and we're going to also go one full processional rotation of the cycle of the Earth back 26,100 years. So again, that's that 36,600 year time period, and that lion on the Great Giza Plateau was a lion pointing to the constellation of Leo. Those are the Minkarians. Now, the Minkarians originally came from Eridu, because if you remember earlier in the story, I told you that the scientists that were doing the original genetic engineering in the Hollow Moon, okay, got in, found the female women desirable, and they were thrown to the Earth. And then so they continued to do genetic engineering at Eridu on the Earth in ancient Sumeria, but ultimately they split off from that group, and a secondary group ended up in Egypt, in the location that I'm talking about in Menkaure. And the reason we know that is there's a pad next to the Great Pyramid of Giza, and it has sacred geometric formulation built into it. And we have to understand that the ancient 0.0 latitude longitudinal points the old latitude longitudinal points, you know, go all the way around the Earth, and it's critical to understanding the sacred geometry of taking what's known as a tetrahedron configuration and basically placing it, it's like a soccer ball, and placing it inside the Earth, and then those line up to the latitude longitudinal points and become our vortex portal locations. And I know I went off, but I wanted to go into that subject so that we could it gets to the point of why and how we as human beings are the spaceships, ultimately, that are going to transcend into outer space.
Well, what you're describing with the tetrahedron inside the Earth and everything is, I think a lot of people are familiar with that from the work of Richard Hoagland in hyperdimensional physics.
Right.
Okay. And it's also, that is... If you push that theory far enough, you get into the Merkaba.
Yes.
Okay. So our principal source of information about the Menkaurans is this tablet that's at the Great Pyramid, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Now, I am not an expert in archaeology or anything like that, but I can suggest, you know, there is material on this subject matter, many good places to go. But the sacred geometry, again, things that I like to point out are the sacred geometry that's showing up in crop circles by an angel by the name of Metatron. And then, again, something I want to point out is if we also look at... again, we jump into the subject of angels, and, you know, we have accounts of different angels showing up in locations, you know, having to do with this sacred geometry.
Okay, do we have any idea what race Metatron is, what race of being he is?
You know, I do not... In the sense that he's not a human. Again, when we talk about these levels of angels, 10 levels of angels moving toward God, the story is that Metatron was assigned the Earth. Whether he was, you know, if you go up 10 levels, you start at human, you go to, you go up the levels, you start at human, angels, archangels, principalities, powers, virtues, dominions, ophanim, thrones, cherubims, and seraphims, which, again, he must, you know, he probably was an angel, one of the lowest level left on Earth, but he is, you know, he is trying to communicate with mankind through sacred geometry and crop circles. And again, this also pops up with the angel Moroni talking to Joseph Smith, and, you know, which is, of course, leads into the whole Mormon religion. But we find these accounts of these angels, 72 of them, popping up all over the place. And again, we're looking at that 100,000-year time period on the timeline. You know, whether you, if you're in ufology and you want to call angels aliens, aliens angels. But again, that modification of my DNA and then the communication from the Nordic Andromedan alien intelligence told me that angels are not aliens. Aliens are not angels. They're there is alien intelligence, and then there are angels. So angels are outside of the third dimension. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I'm curious about the sources of information about the angels. In the Bible, the races of angels that are mentioned are the cherubim and the seraphim.
Okay.
Two separate races, completely two separate descriptions of what they look like. The seraphim being flying, flaming reptilians. Cherubim being basically humanoid in shape, but they've got it's pretty interesting, weird. They've got four heads. One of them is human, and three of them are animal. And their feet are like the hooves of calves' feet, according to the description that's in the Bible. And then some people say, well, the Nephilim are the fallen angels. That's not true, because the word angel means messenger. That's all it means. It's just a job description. And the Nephilim never did anything.
The way that I had wrestled around with it, I ultimately came to the conclusion that the descriptive language that they were, the language that they were using at the time and the descriptions that they had available to them, they didn't understand. So there was conceptualization that was put in written format in the Bible. In other words, they gave the best descriptions of the things that they were seeing that they could.
Mm-hmm.
Whether these things were devils and, you know, with horns and wings and stuff like that, we don't really know, because modern day Native American Indians describe our jet aircraft, you know, as such. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I'm just saying that there's only two races of beings mentioned in the Bible that now hang on for the whole question here. There's two races of beings mentioned, and now a cherubim is not an angel just because he's a cherubim. Some cherubim are messengers. They are angels. Same with seraphim. Not all seraphim are angels. The angel is a job description, like plumber. But there's only two mentioned. Now, I don't think that that's the whole entire list of what's out there. But I'd like to know where we can look for, you know, as a source for some of these other levels. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Greg Volz, and Greg, because I was running out of time, I really couldn't do that question justice. So let me clarify. If we're talking about angels and we're talking about the Bible, we've got two races of beings, some of whom serve as angels. Actually three, because some of the Elohim do too. Two that are very different from us, and that would be the cherubim and the seraphim. Okay.
Right.
Now, I don't think that the Bible is the only source of information for what's going on out there.
Exactly.
All right. Now, I'm not attacking the Bible. For those of you who are religious, sometimes I say things and you take it the wrong way. You think I'm attacking. I'm not. I'm making an observation. The Bible, for instance, tells us about a great flood. It's not the only ancient script that tells us about a great flood. There are many others, and some of them more ancient than what we have in the Bible, that tell us about a great flood. So that's what I'm referring to. So there are other documents out there that talk about angels. I know Enoch, the book of Enoch, does. talk about these angels, and it names some of them, and they're pretty interesting. Raphael is one of them, but anyway. So where do we look to find these 10 levels of angels? What literature do we look at?
And that was part of this exclusive here. I have a posting right now that gives us a link on our Facebook group and on our Facebook under Kevin Smith Radio Show that has a direct link. But I'm going to put up a direct link on the Northwest UFO Chaser site, and it will list the angels of God and give you that information. But what I want to say that's really critical for the Northwest UFO Chasers video library and this whole web experience is, again, I am coming at this from the standpoint of the PhD and academic practices. So there's archaeology, there's genealogy that we talked about earlier, there's Egyptology and Carmen Bolter and her opinion. And this is the area of theology, and you know how controversial theology is.
Theology's fiction. Theology's fiction.
So anyway, I just wanted to say that, and I'm glad you pointed out the books of Enoch, because this does include the Nag Hammadi and the books of Enoch in that regard. And then you talked about the Merkabah, and I would like to mention Melchizedek, you know, because, and that, you know, that portion of the theology. And then what's critical within the theology and the spiritual experience that I'm having, I believe that we need a uniting of Islam, Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, and Buddhism, you know. But anyway, that's just my personal opinion and my spiritual experience, and I wanted to get that out there because that's kind of critical for us.
How are you going to unite things that are diametrically opposed?
You know, I'm not the one who is going to unite. I believe that this is in works and in plan by God and has been all along. I don't, and the only, you know, this is, like I said, this is just an experience that I've had. But from one simple thing, Abraham had two sons, one named Ishmael and one named Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac represents Judaism. Ishmael represents Islam. So really, Christianity, you know, and Islam are brothers. And, you know, this, you know, we fought for thousands of years, but I don't think people even know that portion of the story. And then, you know, I don't want to go on and on, but it can get deeper if we get into Krishna and Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama, and, you know, Siddhartha. But there is a uniting, and that includes the Native American Indian and the South American Indian philosophies of star beings. So, in that regard, yeah, this is a very, theology in that sense is very deep. But it's, it can be looked at on the Northwest UFO Chasers Video Library site. So, did you want to ask me another question?
Well, I just wish you all the best as you try to promote the uniting of ideas that are diametrically opposed. It's like matter and antimatter. They explode in each other's presence. And the problem is that you have each Islam and Judaism and Christianity, all three of those are religions of exclusivity. In other words, we have the truth, it's our way. And that's not just an opinion, that's in their scriptures. And that's both in the Quran, in the Old Testament, and in the New Testament. So in all three scriptures, sets of scriptures, each one proclaims its exclusivity. And exclusivity does not promote inclusivity. So I don't know how that'll work, but
well, that's why I think we have to probably leave it up to God.
Yeah, or everybody can realize.
See, again, I want to make sure it's clear. I'm not the one uniting everybody. I'm just giving this opinion based on information that's being gathered out of the Northwest UFO Chasers Video Library and that historical timeline and putting it into context as to potentially what may have happened to us and giving us an answer. And like I said, it tells us that, you know, we came from the constellation points to the Earth. Looks like some scientists did some genetic engineering on us. And here later, we're trying to figure out how to get back to God. And we have multiple dimensions and layers and things to do. So, there's a lot to it. But I find it interesting, and that's what keeps me busy every day.
I would imagine it would. I think one approach, though, might be for everybody to realize that all theology, 100% of it, in every religion, is fiction. Theology, by itself, its definition is thinking about God. So who is it that's doing all this thinking about God? Mankind. I mean, God's not sitting around thinking about God. So theology is us thinking about God. Therefore, whatever it is we think and we write down, it could just as easily be a novel. As far as I'm concerned, theology is fiction. Now, the scriptures of each of these places, or each of these groups, that's a different category. You have to decide whether you think they are scripture, and if you do think they are scripture, then, you know, they just say what they say, not what some theologian says they say. I always contend, Greg, you know, let me ask you, when was the last time you read a newspaper and then as soon as you read it, you jumped up and ran outside, found a professional journalist to explain to you what you read?
Right.
Nobody does that.
Nobody does.
Because we're not stupid. So, you know, I think anybody that wants to know what is Islam, what's it all about, just read their Quran. You want to know what the Jews are all about? Read what we call the Old Testament. You want to know what the Christians are all about? Read what they call the New Testament. And you don't have to have a pro to tell you what it says. It says what it says, but it just, all of them say some really bizarre stuff. And you have to decide if you think that bizarre stuff actually happened. Talk about alternative information. Alternative information. The cutting edge is in all those scriptures.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back. Don't go away, please. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with Gregory Volz. He is the developer of a website called the Northwest UFO Chasers Web Experience. And we're talking about some wide-ranging topics that are within the UFO genre. They get talked about a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit over there. But he's kind of pulled all of these things together and more at his website, so you want to be sure and check that out. Welcome to all of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. We're delighted to have you. Thank you for being here. My sympathy to you for whatever kept you away for the first hour, but we're glad you're here now. Let me say now, and I also will try to remember before the next break, that the next break does contain the trailer of the show that Robbie Thomas and I shot, the TV show. And there are some photographs that some people may find disturbing. You do not want to have children in the room when we do the next break, okay? At least you don't want to have them where they can see if you're watching, where they can see the break. All right, back to our guest, and we'll open up the telephone lines here in just a minute to see if you have questions. I'm sure you do, all across this country, from coast to the other coast, from north border to south border, and all around this world, there are people I know with questions now about what we've been talking about. So get your fingers warmed up, get ready, because we are going to open up the telephone lines in just a little bit so that you can call in and talk with our guest, ask a question, make a comment. Or maybe I said something that upset you and you want to call and tell me that I upset you. Please do that if you feel that you need to do that. Please do, because here, unlike the rest of the country, we practice freedom of speech. We still function as if there is a Constitution. All right, Greg.
Yes. Yeah, fantastic. I'm up here in beautiful Seattle, Tacoma, Washington, underneath Mount Rainier, and I want to say Merry Christmas to all of my Northwest UFO Chasers fans that are out there, because a lot of them are listening in tonight. And, yeah, you know, I want to really say that I am not, you know, I don't have all of the answers or any of the answers. You know, we formulate these answers together as people when, you know, and we love it when people come to our group and we have these interchanges. And, I mean, we're all open. But I really want to point out a couple of things, like, we talked a lot about angels, and angels can take an entire, you know, as we're noticing, a two-hour radio show on its own. But in the book, there are things like therianthropes, you know, where they were doing genetic modification, which are those animals, you know, that have human bodies. That's an interesting area. We could talk about that sometime. And again, these vortex portals and the orbs that are transporting between Hesdalen, Norway, and Mount Adams, Washington. We're capturing them on film, going in one end and boom, coming out the other. Those are those vortex portal locations that I talked about in that tetrahedron thing earlier, on the grid alignment. So, I wanted to point out a couple of other subjects that the book goes into. We're always, you know, looking at giants come after that 100,000-year period. We know that, you know, during that genetic modification, we got giants in there. That's a big one. And then, you know, the great harmonics in that time frame. So I thought I'd throw that. And then basically I want to say one other thing that's really important is space travel. You know, I mean, we're locked into this paradigm of Albert Einstein, and we got to go the speed of light. Well, guess what? We don't have to go the speed of light. We can move at the speed of thought. And if we move at the speed of thought, that's our light body essence inside, and it can travel to those locations. And I know that sounds a little complex, but that's what the book goes into.
Well, you know, I put an article in our forums about sort of about that just within the past couple of days. You know, for most people on this planet, when they think about the highest technology we have, the very best, highest, most advanced thinking they can do is still pedestrian. Because traveling through space, if we do the Einstein method, the problem is that we cannot get up to the speed of light at present, to the best of our knowledge. But even if you're traveling at the speed of light, that's not the fastest speed in the universe. The fastest speed in the universe is the speed of dark. What happens if a photon accelerates beyond its speed of light? It outruns illumination. So the instant you go beyond the speed of light, you have outrun light. You have outrun illumination. You're traveling faster than light. Therefore, you're traveling at the speed of dark. But even if you could do that,
and
you're
like
still talking about
on that a little bit.
Do what?
I'd like to accentuate. I'd like to add on to that a little bit and say that what they had indicated or communicated to me was based on the gravity, electromagnetism, and the strong and weak atomic forces, which are what created the universe. And in that regard, if you take a small nuclear reaction, as in fusion, and a strong nuclear reaction, as in fission, and put it gyroscopically between gravity and electromagnetism, you get an anti-gravitational effect of an orb. And so again, what I'm saying is these properties that we're talking about, mm-hmm. and the things that you're mentioning all really do make sense, but it depends on how you communicate them. But again, when you were talking about that photon, you know, racing, these are things you have to conceptualize in your mind almost to understand them.
And well, that's true. But see, even
three-dimensionally it helps. And you're doing a great job when you were explaining that.
Well, even if you could travel at the speed of dark, which is faster than the speed of light, you're still talking about mass, speed, and distance. Or mass, speed, and time equals distance. So it's linear across space. But what if the key has nothing to do with speed at all? What if the key has to do with frequency?
And there's a little quantum physics element that they talk about known as entanglement,
mm-hmm.
or term entanglement, and I think that in that regard, you know, that's bleeding edge right there, the entanglement. They're seeing in a petri dish a particle illuminate simultaneously, you know, 3,000 miles away in two petri dishes, but under observation they don't see it, but non-observation it happens. So I, again, these are complex terms, but what you're saying basically, if you're trying to see this in your mind, is maybe time doesn't really exist and we can be here and there simultaneously. Is that what you're saying?
I think that's a possibility, but okay. But what I am saying is that even if you can't be here and there simultaneously, if you can only be one place at one time, I think it's still possible to dial in the frequency. I don't know what the technology would be that would make it possible, but I think it's possible to dial in the frequency of a spot in the universe and be there. You know, look, we're on radio right now. We've got radio stations all across the country that are carrying this show, and they're all on a certain frequency. So let's just pick one. We'll say 1610 AM. Okay, so the station is dialed in to 1610 AM. And my voice at 1610 AM is filling up a space out there. Now, people who, you know, within a certain distance around their antenna. Now, people who dial their radio frequency to 1610 AM in that part where, you know, in the range of that station, they are hearing me. But that same radio sitting right there on that same table, they can switch the frequency and listen to a radio station that's 200 miles away. You know, all right. Now, what I'm saying is I don't understand exactly what the technology would be. But when you tune your radio to a frequency, your ears have been transported to the town where that's coming from, to the location where that's coming from. And
where this becomes applicable is within the human body, we have a soul or a spirit of light that basically vibrates at frequency, and if it ramps up in frequency, it actually moves outside of the human sensory spectrum perception levels. So the solidification of, again, you were using radio waves, but I'm talking about inside a human body,
mm-hmm.
but we're putting practicality to this these concepts. And I know it sounds crazy, but you know, the English language doesn't really lend itself to explaining some of this, but again, we can wrestle around with it and we can look at it, but that's what I'm seeing.
Well, yeah, we haven't invented the words yet that we will need to talk about this technology. It's just like we now use the words input and output, but those were not in the English language prior to the computer age. Those are new. And we'll invent words that, you know, and in fact, I'll just invent one now. I've used it before, but we'll just say that what we're talking about here is called quadlopoddle. Okay, so I invented the word. It's a quadlopoddle. All right, let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome. Let me turn you up just a little bit there, okay? Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Volz, you mentioned that you were abducted by aliens.
Yeah, go ahead.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Okay, yeah, I'd love to elaborate on that. You know, I'm calling it an abduction experience, but I want to give you an understanding that it was more like a spiritual experience. And in that regard, in other words, again, when we were talking about outside human sensory spectrum perception levels and this vibration, I feel that my spirit or soul was taken outside of our normal third dimension, and I was taken somewhere, and this modification of my DNA was done to me. I'm wrestling with trying to communicate the experience, and I know sometimes I don't do a very good job of it, but that's about the best that I can tell you. I hope that was a good enough answer.
It seems to me that if it was spiritual, they wouldn't. It seems like it would have to be physical for them to alter your DNA, but I guess conceptually, spiritually, it could be done also.
Do you understand what he's saying there, Greg?
Yeah. What was indicated to me, and again, it's within our DNA construct. And whether there's physicality to the DNA and how we conceptualize physicality. And this is the problem. In other words, if it's vibrating at a high frequency, it might not necessarily be there physically. But that doesn't mean that it's not there. So if it's vibrating at a high frequency, it seems like it's not there, but they can take it and modify it. I hope that made sense.
I kind of understand the concept that you're getting to. Also, you mentioned our purpose, and I think you said that our purpose was to go out into space, like space travel. Am I correct in recalling that?
Well, I didn't say our purpose. I personally don't know. What I'm trying to say is, basically, the information that I'm relaying, I want to, you know, express this over and over, is coming from a compilation of the information that's available in my Northwest UFO Chasers video library. So, and then, in that regard, did that help? I'm sorry. Go ahead and ask that question again.
No, my purpose is, I thought you said that we as mankind were meant to go out into outer space.
Well, what I was saying was that we are currently living under a paradigm of Albert Einstein with a limitation of traveling at light speed. And I'm saying that if we just look at it a little bit differently, that we might be able to travel. Not that that's what our purpose is, but that would be another way of being able to space travel, if we could literally take our light body essences and project them to another point or a location in the universe.
I can understand that conceptually. And what about like negative beings? Like who's in charge on the Earth and what, specifically like chemtrails? I keep asking guests on the Kevin Smith Show the purpose of chemtrails. Do you have any idea?
You know, that opens up. Yeah, that opens up a big can of worms. I mean, for you know, that's a whole other show. But you know, there's these chemtrails. There's harp sweeps. There's you know, subliminal broadcasting going on. There's a multitude of things. Some people think that we're ingesting a lot of toxins. And you know, and some people believe that there's some nefarious elements at work. You know, like they call it the Illuminati. You know, I don't know how much I buy in and believe all of that, how orchestrated, you know, all of that is, and how organized that those entities are. I just don't know. So I can only tell you what is in existence from the research work that I've done in the video library.
Okay, so what about the chemtrails?
What's that?
What about the chemtrails? What's the story with that? What are those for?
Okay, the chemtrails seem to be... From what has been indicated by the Nordic Andromedan alien intelligence is that chemtrails is an RNA activator, okay, that dumbs us down. Antipsychotic medication, antidepressant medication, some of the medication that's being given to us is meant to dumb us down. The subliminal messaging that's coming from, you know, major network broadcasts is meant to dumb us down. These things, the harp sweeps, they're meant to dumb us down. It's RNA activation of our DNA to keep us docile and from asking questions. But there is an awakening going on, and we all kind of know it, and we're awakening to this. And so there's something that is activating our RNA in this regard, both positively and negatively, and chemtrails is part of the negative side of that.
Well, that you said earlier that you're not sure there was a nefarious side of this, but that sure seems very nefarious to me. And thank you, Kevin, for reiterating my question about the chemtrails. And thank you, Mr. Volz, for being a guest on the Kevin Smith Show.
Yeah, thank you, and Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
All right, thank you, Jerome. The telephone number, folks, is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. That works anywhere on this planet. And probably on Nibiru as well, I'm not sure. But if you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, you can call that number. It'll work. Or you can use our flash message feature on my website. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Rusty.
How does what you're doing fit into this 2012 stuff going on?
I love that question. I thought about this a lot. I mean, this isn't just my personal opinion. Again, it's based on the research work, but and from information coming from the Nordic Andromedan alien intelligence. And what they have indicated to me is that there's a lot of worry and doom and gloom being projected by people over 2012. And they said, don't waste time worried about all of that. It's all for nothing. So I just feel basically that they're saying that it's a non-event. 2012 is going to come and go, and we're all going to be fine.
So what would be their, these beings that you've talked to, what would be their timeline of... It seems like you're talking about there's going to be a period of where we're going to change into either a different being or our DNA is going to be opened up. What is the time frame of that happening?
And that's another great question. And what they have indicated is that we see things linearly in the third dimension in time. Can you repeat that question so that I can... Go ahead and repeat your question.
What is the timeline that... I mean, 2012, is, if it's going to be a non-event, what is the timeline for this changeover? So we're not, as you just mentioned, looking linear.
Right. Okay, so yeah, that's a great question. The changeover of ourselves is going on now as it has gone on in the past to us, as it will always go on. And what I'm really trying to communicate is that we are moving in ascendance, which means moving forward, in transcendence toward our Creator, which is basically moving forward in time. And our light body essences are doing that. Yours is doing that. Mine is doing that. We are all doing that. So we are progressing and growing. But nothing unique about an awakening is going to happen all at one time. The process is actually individual. So what I'm saying is you're going to have your experience. I'm going to have my experience. And each individual on this planet is going to have their own experience. So it's not going to be one big awakening to some big event like maybe the UFOs coming, you know, and presenting themselves. They've been here and they've been around for 4.5 million years, believe it or not.
Okay, so one last question. So it kind of sounds like you buy into the idea of reincarnation.
I do entertain the idea of reincarnation, and what I would really like to mention there is there was a great video called The Moncla Memories of an Air Force pilot who went through reincarnation, and there's been a lot of research on reincarnation, so I don't know if you know about that.
Yeah. Not that particular person, but... Well, that's all the questions I had. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Rusty. 623-444-5889. If you have a question or a comment for our guest, wherever you happen to be, all across North America, all across Europe, all across Africa, Asia, Australia, that number will work, but if you're not in the USA and Canada, you can use our flash message option. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hello, Steve.
How you doing?
Good.
And Greg, how are you?
Good. How are you, Steve?
Doing just fine, thank you. I thought I would reference a lot of what I've been hearing tonight to some work that was done by R. Gordon Wasson.
Oops. Steve, can you hang on? We have a break taking over, and I'll catch you on the other side. Is that all right?
Yes, sir.
All right, hang on. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away, and remember, no kids in the room if you're watching this.
Radio like nowhere else on earth.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with Greg Volz. We have on the line with us from Georgia, Steve. Are you still with us, Steve?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right, go ahead.
All right, I just wanted to reference alien abductions with some work that was done by the Dr. R. Gordon Wasson down, I believe it was in the University of Arizona. He was the one researcher, I believe a neuroscientist and physician, who was entrusted with researching DMT. The use of DMT and its effect on the human brain and our cognitive factors. And one of the things that came out of Dr. Wasson's experimentation was that if he if he gave enough DMT IV to one of his subjects, that he could reproduce the alien abduction experience. You know, and these guys would be lying there in his laboratory on a bed, you know, on a monitor with the IV in their arm, dripping this DMT, and they never went anywhere physically. Yet, for as far as they were concerned, they had just been abducted by aliens, and they could tell you all about it. I find that interesting, and I'd like to tie that into the possibility of the uniting of these disparate religions. If you belong to one of these paradigms, say Christian or Hebrew or Islamic, and you completely buy into the belief system that you've been raised in, it would take something immensely powerful, like a burst of DMT, that would completely blow away your previous programming, where you would renounce, you would actually be able to renounce whatever it was that that you had defined your life by. You'd defined your entire belief system and all your value systems, your morality, and everything, that you were ready to renounce it based on the potency of this experience, that perhaps a burst of DMT would cause. I'm just mentioning these things because I'm referencing some of the things I'm hearing to the DMT experience. And and I guess Greg, I'd like for you to comment on this, if you would.
And after he does, I want to comment also.
Yeah, I'd like to say, and I'd like to give you a perspective from the Northwest UFO Chasers video library, in the sense that going back and looking and doing the research work, we found out that there was deep harmonic vibrational technology that was going on in ancient Egypt, going all the way back to the Menkaurans. So this is that vibrational frequency. And in that regard, the human body has an endocrine glandular system. And what it has told us is that moving up through the body, through these points of the body, which are in the endocrine glandular system, we ultimately, it culminates in the pineal gland, which is this DMT release point that you are talking about by this Dr. Wasson. There is a correlation between the release of DMT and the light body essence moving to another location. The only thing is that we are in that location simultaneously. I know that's a hard conceptualization to make, but again, some of us, you know, see it as we're here in the third, but I wanted to give you what the Northwest UFO Chasers Video Library and the research was pointing at, and it's the pineal gland and that DMT release, and that's about what I, you know, have to say on that. So.
Okay, now my comment is this. It is possible to, either with small electric impulses to the brain, various parts of the brain, or with chemical inducement, to cause people to experience things. And to them, it seems very, very real. But that doesn't nullify or replace the real events. And here's why. It has been shown that by certain electrical impulses in certain places in the brain, they can cause the subject laying on the table to have the greatest sex in his life. Only it's not happening. Okay. Does that mean that nobody out there ever has sex? No. I can assure you that as I speak to you now, people around the world are doing it. Okay. Now, just because they can cause this fake experience to happen doesn't mean that the real experience isn't going on. The real experience does go on. And so I'm not sure. I understand what you're saying, but I'm not sure that if you gave people a whole bunch of DMT, that would cause them suddenly to give up their religious beliefs. The strongest drug in the world is religious belief. It's absolutely stronger than every other drug on the planet, because people will kill for it, even if they know they're wrong.
Well, those are excellent answers from both of you. Let me just say that in experiences I've had in lucid dreaming, I do believe that we are multidimensional beings, that we exist simultaneously in various places, and because the DMT would give us an experience, that doesn't make it a false experience. You know, I mean, how can we say it's false? You know. But I do believe we're multidimensional beings, and I think the sky's the limit, and our goal is the center of the cosmos, which was the creative force that created all the bodies in the cosmos, and we're headed back there eventually anyway. And that's just my personal belief. And thank you, Kevin, for entertaining my phone call, and thank you, Greg, for being a guest on this show.
Thank you. Good thoughts. We appreciate it. Yeah, 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call that number, or you can send me a flash message. If you're in the USA or Canada, we need you to use a telephone. We do have a flash message here from Bruno in España. Hello, my name is Bruno from Madrid, Spain. I have a question for the guest. What made you believe in God?
That's a good question. I have always believed in God in the sense that when I was very young, I had a spiritual experience. It was more than a dream, and I would say a prophet came to me in that dream, and that's but God to me has been enlightened to me as an experience, and so I have wrestled with that my entire life. I find myself constantly saying I need to have faith in a belief of a creator, of something bigger, and in that regard, that's what it is.
Okay, fair enough. You know, this thing about religious beliefs, anybody that saw my presentation that I did at the Alchemy event, and we televised it in our members' community on Saturday and Sunday a couple of weeks ago. So if you've seen that, you understand I'm not saying that you need to be devoid of belief. In fact, I plainly say in that seminar or in that presentation that if you don't have feelings and belief, you are functionally insane. But if you don't have rationality and logic, you're functionally insane. It takes both. And the question is not should we have beliefs. The question is the role they should play. I like cantaloupes, but they don't work real good as a piston in your engine. They have a role to play, and if you try to make them play a different role, it doesn't work.
And the question becomes, what applicability does it play in our life as we're living it? In other words, can we, as we're living life, how does this apply to the life we're living? And that's kind of what the research work tries to answer, that question, because we're living this life and we don't have the answers and we need to apply it, and in that regard, so yeah.
Well, and as long as someone, see, there's nothing wrong with saying, well, I believe this or I believe that. As long as you understand when you say that, you're also saying, I don't know. Because a belief is what we fill in the blank with when the data, when we've run out of data. And we either know or we don't know. And if we fill in one of those blanks that where we say, I don't know, we fill it in with, but I believe it works this way. Well, that's fine, as long as you understand that when you say, I believe, you're saying, I don't know. This is a conjecture, and I believe this. Let me tell you why that's important, folks, because a lot of people believe a lot of things, and they believe God said it, and they're absolutely determined that, you know, if they don't believe this, then they are betraying God. And they believe those things, and a lot of times we find out later it was absolutely wrong. It was an absolute matter of faith. I mean, you were on your way to hell if you didn't believe that the earth was flat. It was absolutely a matter of faith, and you were on your way to hell if you didn't believe that the earth was the center of everything and that all the planets and all the stars revolved around the earth. That was a teaching of the church, and you could be excommunicated, you could be executed if you didn't believe that. Well, see, that's the problem. The problem is when you take a belief and you try to make it knowledge. You substitute that and say it is knowledge. That's the problem. It's not knowledge. Cantaloupes are not pistons. Pistons are real hard to chew. They don't work real good in a salad, but, you know, cantaloupe does pretty good in salad. But a cantaloupe makes a lousy piston. And belief makes lousy knowledge. Knowledge makes lousy belief. So they have a role to play, both of them. And they're both important. But one of the reasons we have people out there cutting each other's throats and strapping on bombs and stuff like that over religion is because they think that belief is knowledge. It's not. Belief is an admission you don't know. And as long as you operate with it like that, it works. Now, you may disagree with me, Greg. Please.
No, it's not a matter of disagreeing. It's a matter of this is where I come to.
Okay, hang on. We have a break taking over. As soon as we come back from this break, we'll pick up right there and let you respond to that. Don't go away, folks. More right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach, ladies and gentlemen. That means we only have a few minutes left in the show. If you have a question or a comment for our guest, or a question or comment for me, 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. But you got to call right now because we're going to run out of time. Greg, you were about to respond to what I said about cantaloupes and pistons.
Yeah, it was just something really simple. I mean, the name of my company is Northwest UFO Chasers, and in that regard, let's say I or you or anybody had the experience of seeing that UFO. You know, that's an unidentified flying object. We've just had an experience. At what level do we say, hey, was that reality or wasn't that reality? Was the object, you know, reality or non-reality? We had the experience, and now we're trying to explain that experience. And so, again, you know, the whole target of the whole system, the Northwest UFO Chaser Video Library, is to substantiate these things that are happening out there, as in UFOs, and give it some credence. And that's all I was going to say is in response to what you were saying. It's an experience. you know, whether
well, you can know you had, yeah, you know you had the experience, but when you start explaining what you think that thing was, you do get into some belief.
Right.
But you know you had the experience. You know, the way it works is knowledge always has to trump belief. If
and
you
I,
believe...
I want to jump in and really say something really quick and then get back to the questions if I can. I want to say that the whole system was to take each one of the academic principles, archaeology, Egyptology, and each one of those can be a paragraph. And if we were to take each one of those and put it into this big giant movie, you know, for modern academia, why couldn't they have a board so that we could get an animated version of what we actually think transpired? Maybe we could get everybody to vote on it. Anyway, that was what I had been trying to work toward, and I'm going to work toward that in the future. It's a far-reaching goal, but if we could get funding for that, that would be kind of exciting and something to work toward. And that'll be the last thing that I'll say.
All right, let's go to the telephone for our last call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, Kevin, Greg, this is Brett from Marquette, Michigan.
Hey Brett.
Actually, hello. I don't know where to begin. You guys have hit so many different points. Looking at the 2012 situation, and taken into light, information brought out by Dolores Cannon, a variety of other people, you start looking at the Mayan calendar, all the different links, all these different strings I'm trying to pull together. No, excuse me, I'm nervous.
It's all right.
Hold up here.
Yeah,
but, you know, I hear what you're saying about, you know, 2012 being a non-event, and I've felt very much the same way, but there are some things that tend to pop up, as, you know, the ending of the age is the beginning of the age of Aquarius. We have a lot of different shifts that are going on, and I'm kind of curious as to, you know, if you think there's actually a rising to a crescendo, or say like the quickening, you know, to put it in sci-fi or fantasy terms, you know, from modern movie genre. But I'm kind of interested to see where you see this is going, if it's truly happening, or if it's just like a continuation of the evolution of our souls through time, back to, say, remembering, you know, becoming one, you know, basically going back to the singularity and then hence to another Big Bang. What are we?
All right, let's give Greg a chance to answer that.
You know, simply, I just agree with what you're saying, you know, in the fact that I think that what's going on with all of us, is, you know, has already basically happened. And in that regard, we're, you know, in existence simultaneously. There's multidimensionality, and I just am saying that I'm not saying that we're not going to change as an age, and maybe, you know, as in moving from the golden age to a bronze age to a dark age, you know, through a processional cycled rotation type thing.
Yeah,
I'm just. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying that I think that we are going to change, you know, in the age to come forward, but that it's not going to be as big of an event as everybody's... it's not going to be the end of the world.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I realize that. Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. I'm just kind of in, you know, it's... You know, there's so many strings to try to pull together, you know, regarding, you know, current conspiracies and, you know, historical landmarkers, ancient civilizations and the landmarks. You know, today I listened to The Code. Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Brett, let me give you something to think about here. Think about this now.
Okay.
It is possible that when we hear people talk about how there's going to be this great awakening and ascension and all of that. It is possible that what they are seeing is the collective result at the end of that next age that we're entering into. And that Greg is saying it's going to be a process through that age to get there.
Ah, okay. All right. Yeah, I follow you. Yeah. Well, you know, most excellent show, gentlemen. You know, like I said, you know, so many different points, you know, I'd like to touch on, but I'll get off the phone. And
well, before you do, Brett, are you a first-time caller?
Oh, no, I've called in several times.
Okay.
It's been a while.
All right, you've heard then that I have, you have heard then that I will be having a party in Bangkok, Thailand, December the 21st, 2012.
Yes, and I've heard about it for several years now.
That's right. Okay, you need to plan to be there. You need to plan to be there. And if I'm wrong, we'll all go out having a good time. I bet I'm not wrong.
Yeah. It sounds great.
All right. Maybe we can convince Greg to be there, too.
I would love to.
Okay, Brett, thanks for the call. That's for real. I'm having a party December the 21st, 2012. Bangkok, Thailand is, it's already tomorrow there. So it'll be the 20th actually there when I do the party. And we will usher in December the 21st, 2012. And if we made it in Thailand, then everybody's gonna make it. And, we're gonna have, good food, great music, and, have a good time. And if I'm wrong, we'll all find out at the same time. But I think on December 22nd, I'm going to do my last-minute Christmas shopping. I think so. I don't think that it's going to be the cataclysm and earthbuster that people think it's going to be. But if it is, I'm not exempt.
So either, and I think each one of us is going to have a personal experience. But in that regard, I'd like to just say that, as one last thing, Merry Christmas to everybody, and have everybody have a wonderful holiday season, and thank you to all of my Northwest UFO Chasers fans. And if anybody wants to come and ask questions, we're right on Facebook.
Outstanding. All right, Greg, just stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring this in for a landing. Well, there you have it, folks. Greg Volz, he is in the UFO discovery business, if you will, and I don't mean business. You understand what I mean. And he looks at things from a whole different perspective than most people do who are in the field of UFOs. And it's very interesting and very refreshing to hear these different perspectives. I hope you'll go and visit his website. And I hope you will take a look at the stuff that's there. And, you know, you might decide you think he's right. You might decide you think he's wrong. But why decide before you look at what he's put on the website? Don't forget to subscribe to the K-Files. And don't forget to join our members community. Do it now while there's still a special going on. All right, my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.